This is Locked On Nets, your source for daily Brooklyn Nets coverage. I am your host, Josh Bass. And on today's show, Marcus and I will interview former Nets forward Trevor Booker, get his thoughts on the Nets' success and the state of the league, and also talk about the exciting victory over the Denver Nuggets on this pre-trade deadline edition of Locked On Nets. Coming to your ears right now.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Locked On Nets here, joined by Marcus Barahal, my partner in crime. Marcus, big win last night for our boys.
We're back. Second straight podcast for us where I've been introduced as your partner in crime. I like it. I think it's going to stick. I think this could be the one.
Mm-hmm.
Nice this Nets win. Over the Nuggets, high-scoring affair. The offense finally woke up, so that was good to see.
Yeah, it was good to see, and I've only seen, just for full disclosure, about a quarter and a half of it. I was at work late last night and missed it when I got home, and we're recording early morning for scheduling purposes, but wanted to capture Marcus's excitement, at least, from this big win, and also my excitement from D'Angelo Russell dunking, because that was one thing that I did get to see, and that was hype.
His second dunk of the year, and the first one was barely a dunk. I don't know if you saw it, but they showed a clip of his first dunk during the game. It was against the Phoenix Suns.
Yeah, it was like kind of a combo lay-in dunk thing.
Yeah, it was like almost like a floater where he then just like touched the rim. But this one was legit. The bench was really excited. Jared Dudley, you could kind of see him in the background of the shot of Russell dunking, and he just had like a look of pure shock on his face. His mouth, his jaw dropped to the floor.
Yeah. Well, Jared Dudley can't dunk, and that's why he's so surprised whenever someone can.
I think he just assumed that no one else could dunk. I think this might have been the first one he'd ever seen, judging by his reaction, at least.
Yeah, no, I think this was a really nice bounce-back game for the Nets. Obviously, Alan Crabb did come back, played only 13 minutes, but I thought he added a nice element in what I saw. And also, I'm loving what Mitchell Creek is giving on the bench, just as kind of a morale guy, and he standing up and clapping.
He's nominated in the pick and poll this week for best bench celebrator. It's him, Pinson, Big Sauce Williams, and one person I'm forgetting. But
yeah, I'm sensing a trend there.
Yeah. Oh, Jean and Musa. Yeah, that's why.
Yeah, definitely sensing a trend.
Yeah.
But yeah, listen, I thought from what I saw, the Nets played pretty well. I thought the bench gave them a really nice spark when Shabazz Napier entered. Damari Carroll, Rondé, even with his energy, I mean, he was still a little out of control at times, but thought he had some nice elements. And listen, the Nets beat Denver twice this year. Denver has, or the Nets have Denver's pick, so it's always nice to beat them. And this is a really good Nuggets team. Obviously, former Net Mason Plumlee is inserted into the starting lineup because Millsap is injured. But, you know, they have Nikola Jokic, first-time All-Star, just a stud of a big man. Jamal Murray is a really good player. Their depth is incredible. I mean, guys like Trey Lyles are huge contributors. Monty Morris has kind of been an unsung hero for them this year. So for the Nets to get this win without Spencer Dinwiddie and Caris LeVert is just huge.
Yeah, like you mentioned, Millsap was out, so is Gary Harris. But even still, the Nuggets are, they have 37 wins, and they're one of the two best teams in the regular season, at least so far, in the Western Conference. But for Brooklyn, I mean, they just did a really nice job of passing the ball. They had 36 assists, and it really showed. Like, the last couple games had been a lot of, like, Napier pounding the ball, and even D'Lo at certain times pounding the ball. But in this one, they spread it around. They got guys involved. There was a lot of motion. I mean, I think even though Crabb only played 13 minutes, his legs definitely seemed back because he was, like, constantly sprinting around the perimeter, it seemed like. And a great call by Ian Eagle on Crabb's first three. He said, "Welcome back, Crabb emoji." Just thrilled that Ian Eagle knows what an emoji is, I think.
Yeah, no, Ian's woke. He knows. I think Crabb looks spry. I'm glad his fat pad is healed.
You never want to bruise that.
Yeah, and Marcus, for me, I want a couple of thoughts for you, because I think at the start of the game, the Nets did look a little bit out of control, same as normal, same as the last couple games, rather. Nuggets got off to an 8-0 start. They were up 16-5. A lot of wild play from Kurucs and Jarrett Allen. The Nets were doing a nice job of hurting their guys because they gave Jamal Murray a bloody nose, and then I don't even know who it was, maybe Rondé, like, hurt Jokic somehow by, like, defending him too hard and, like, poked him in the stomach, maybe?
Yeah, it looked like he grabbed his hip or something.
Yeah. So don't grab Nikola's hips, or anyone's hips, for that matter. So what really changed for you? What was the spark plug for the Nets to close the first quarter down only five and then really take a commanding lead going into halftime with that great second quarter?
There were a few different things. I thought that it was kind of, there were a lot of contributions from guys. The Nets had seven players in double figures in this one. And in the first quarter, at least, and honestly throughout the whole game, I thought Jared Allen played really well on offense. He was doing a lot of, he'd like catch the pass on the roll and take a dribble to evaluate before either like spinning or dunking or kicking out to someone. And I thought that was really nice. I mean, he played that pretty much perfectly throughout the game. And then Travion Graham, who we've kind of like knocked for his offense, he hit four threes and he hit a couple in the first half. And it was just completely out of nowhere, but it definitely helped open things up and space the floor in a way that the Nets haven't really had the last few games. Obviously, I don't expect that to continue. I don't think he's going to make four threes a game. But it's nice when it happens, and when it does happen, you can really see kind of like the ceiling offensively for what the Nets can be.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good point, because like the previous game where the Nets just kind of just got drubbed by the Milwaukee Bucks, they're not going to shoot 5 of 42 from 3 every game, but they're also not going to shoot 19 of 34 like they did against the Nuggets. I think those are the two extremes, but when you look at these two games, getting a win against the teams going into those games that were ranked number one and I believe number one both in each of their respective conferences, yeah, to get a win against one of them, and now you're playing the Chicago Bulls for the next game tomorrow.
I'll be at that game.
Yeah, and you'll be at that game, so you can give us a live look in. It's huge for the Nets because, you know, they have lost. They lost four in a row going into last night.
Three in a row.
Sorry, they get that win. And then, you know, if they had lost that, they would have lost four in a row. Who knows if they could beat the Bulls, because there's been a couple of close games against the Bulls this year. And then you're losing momentum going into the All-Star break. And then all of a sudden, Charlotte and Miami are keeping pace with you. But to get this win is huge. And hopefully they can carry that momentum in to the game against the Bulls. And we'll have a more detailed recap of this game once I'm able to get up to speed. And sorry about that. But before we get to our Trevor Booker interview, I think there was a couple interesting trades in the league yesterday from teams that are in the kind of the 9 and 10 spots of the East and really the Nets competition if there's any chance the Nets don't make the playoffs. For Detroit, they made a trade where they got rid of a couple of different guys. So one, Reggie Bullock, who's a really nice 3 and D piece for them, gets traded to the Lakers for Svi Mykhailiuk and a second-round pick. And then the other trade was that they got Thon Maker for, I believe, Stanley Johnson straight up from Milwaukee. So for me, it's interesting because they're taking an upside play on Thon and getting rid of Stanley Johnson, who really fizzled out after kind of his first year where he said he was going to be the LeBron stopper and they got swept. And they get rid of Reggie Bullock, who's a really great 3-and-D guy, making about 39% of his threes on nearly 7 a game. So I don't think Detroit's going to be a threat. It clearly looks like they're in rebuilding asset accumulation mold. And then Washington trades Otto Porter to the aforementioned Chicago Bulls for Bobby Portis and Jabari Parker. So, I mean, clearly it's a talent downgrade in the meantime because Otto is much better than either of those guys. So if I'm the Nets, I'm saying, hey, let's throw a party. Let's rage, because the 9 and 10 teams of the East, the threats to take your spot in the playoffs, there doesn't seem like there's any kind of rush on their end to really gather assets for that playoff push. It seems like they're setting up more for the future.
Yeah, and also with the Wizards, I believe they also traded Markieff Morris.
Right, for salary dump. To the Pelicans.
Yeah, so I think that both of those teams are kind of, not quite admitting defeat, but just kind of moving on to the next year. The one team that I'm still intrigued by is Orlando, just because they've shown in the past that they'll kind of do anything, and I think that they do still want to make the playoffs. So, we'll see. There's still a couple hours till the trade deadline, but I wouldn't totally be surprised if they made a move for someone.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think the Nets are in good shape, and I think even with Charlotte in talks about Marc Gasol, I think that the Nets still should be in a position where they should make the playoffs. Seeding is still obviously to be determined, but I think they should get in.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, Orlando, even if they do make a move, I think it's going to be kind of marginal on the guard side. And who knows, they might even go the opposite direction and just trade Vucevic. But the Nets are up 6 games on them. They have LeVert coming back. Dinwiddie should be back in a month or so. So I'm feeling pretty good, and I don't get to say that a lot. But I'm optimistic about the Nets' playoff chances. Great win against Denver. And we will take a break, but coming up, Marcus, we had a pretty exciting interview getting to speak to someone that I really admire, Trevor Booker, former Net.
Yeah, for sure. Trevor, great guy, great Net, obviously. Loved watching him play, so looking forward to that in our next segment.
So now joining Marcus and I, we have a longtime NBA veteran, one of my favorite players to watch when he was a Brooklyn Net, Trevor Booker. Trevor, what's going on?
Hey, guys.
Appreciate you joining us. Trevor, you know, you were kind of at the, you joined the Nets in 2016-17 season. That was really the kind of the first full year of Sean Marks and Kenny Atkinson and their tenure. Kind of how has this recent stretch for the Nets been, 29-27 now? For us, it seems kind of miraculous, but have you been surprised at all by what's happening?
I knew it would come, you know, one day under Kenny and Sean. I really didn't expect it this soon, to be honest. You know, they're having a tremendous season. You know, they're beating some of the top teams. They're pretty tough to play at home, especially. And, you know, they have it rolling right now. I know they're coming off they just won last night to end a three-game losing streak. But they're doing things, you know, this season that, you know, not too many people saw.
For sure. And I think a big part of what's made them so successful this year has been kind of sharing the ball movement. They made a ton of passes last night. There was some stat that I saw where they passed it, I think over 300 times, and they had over 30 assists. Do you think that the culture around the team from Sean Marks and Kenny Atkinson kind of contributes to that on the court as well, that unselfishness?
Oh, yeah, definitely. So, I mean, it starts with, you know, putting the right players, you know, on the roster. Very unselfish players. You know, a lot of the guys that I played with, you know, on the Nets are still there, you know, and all those guys weren't selfish. And I'm sure the guys that came after me, you know, they're the same way because that's the culture that they want to bring in. You know, nothing but great guys. You know, so it doesn't surprise me the way they're moving the ball. You know, Sean has done a great job of, you know, getting that roster right and putting the right guys on the floor, you know, well, on the paper, you know, for Kenny. And Kenny has done a great job of, you know, utilizing, you know, his players.
Yeah, absolutely. And really the last couple of years for the Nets, especially when they weren't winning, a lot of the fans were talking about, hey, they have this great practice facility. They're so accommodating for the families of players. Can you speak to that a little bit? I guess, how different was that from the previous environments you were in Washington and Utah before that?
Well, you know, I've been, you know, a few different places, but Brooklyn, you know, Sean came in, he changed the culture. The culture, you know, when I was there was tremendous. You know, they do everything, you know, by the book. You know, they do things family oriented, made it a lot easier for the players. They just try to make everything, you know, a lot easier on the players so they can just focus on basketball. And that made it a lot, you know, easier for us on the court just to know that our families were taken care of, you know, when they came around. So, you know, Sean, he has done a tremendous job, and hats off to him.
Yeah, and you were just so happy to get away from Joe Ingles, right, in Utah?
Oh, man. I couldn't be happier to get away from Joe Ingles.
Oh, my God. That's he seems like quite a character just based on what we see from Twitter and his whole persona.
Nah, Joe's a great guy.
So looking at, I mean, the Nets have had a great run here. A lot of the guys that you played with have been a big part of that, whether it be Spencer Dinwiddie, Joe Harris, Caris LeVert at the start of the season. What are they going to need to do to maintain that success? Obviously, Caris is getting set to come back. Spencer's going to be out for a little while, and the team has been led by D'Angelo Russell this season. But kind of what do you expect from them over these next couple months and hopefully into the playoffs?
Over the next couple of months, I mean, I think they'll continue to improve and build the chemistry on the court. So I don't, you know, see them slowing down too much. You know, every night they go out and play hard. And, you know, that's what Kenny wants. So, you know, and that's what he gets. They go out and play every night. But teams step on the court, you know, with them, they know they're going to have to bring it. And I expect that to, you know, to keep going into the second half of the season. And, you know, the numbers to keep improving.
For sure. And one thing that I'm curious about for your perspective on, just because you mentioned how great the organization was and how accommodating they were, do you think that they're in a position now where free agents are going to look to come to them in the offseason? Because obviously this core has played really well, but they still need kind of like more elite talent if they want to make a jump into like a real contender level. So do you think that free agents will consider the Nets? And if so, what type of guys would they want and who would want to come here?
Yeah, I definitely think, you know, some of the top free agents start to, you know, consider the Nets. I mean, they're in New York, they're in Brooklyn, you know, new arena, you know, great fans, and they see what the team is doing right now. So I think they'll definitely start, you know, considering the Nets for their next destination, especially if they get to come in and, you know, see the culture, hear about the culture and what they're, you know, what they're building. You know, I expect, you know, within the next year or two, for one of the top contenders, I mean, players, free agents to come in and, you know, sign with the Nets. I wouldn't be surprised at all.
Yeah, we're certainly hoping so. And I think it would be a nice kind of cap to what Sean Marks and Kenny Atkinson have been building so far. Trevor, wanted to quickly ask you a couple rapid fire questions. First of all, I'm sure you get this a lot, but your kind of underhanded flip shot with 0.2 seconds left in when you were a member of Utah, I think that's my favorite shot in NBA history. Do you think it's the greatest shot of all time?
I mean, I honestly think it's the greatest shot of all time. Just because I really tried to do it. I mean, it was 0.2 seconds left. I was on the elbow and I went to the rim for a lob and it wasn't there. And, you know, I just went to try to get the ball. And Gordon made a, I don't know why he bounced the pass, like I could shoot it or something. But when I seen it was a bounce pass, I was like, I got to get it up. And, you know, I practice, like, crazy shots all the time in practice. Like, I just throw up crazy shots. And, you know, I just happened to just give it a chance. And it went in.
Well, it made for one of the best moments of that NBA season. I think I watched it probably 15 times in a row just to understand how it happened immediately after I saw it.
Yeah, I was hoping to get an ESPY that year, but it didn't work out.
Trevor, I know you're a big cereal fan. I am too. I just need your opinion on this because a lot of the time I'm on the run, you know, I'm on the move, so I don't eat cereal with milk. I just eat it kind of on its own. As a cereal fan, am I being disrespectful, or is this a good move by me?
I mean, you know, everybody has their own, you know, way of eating cereal. Me, I'm a milk guy. I cannot eat cereal without milk. But my kids eat it without milk sometimes. So, you know, I understand both ways. But being a cereal guy, it's hard to eat it without milk.
I feel like the milk, you know, It's good, you know, it provides something, but at the same time, it kind of dilutes from the cereal itself. You know, I'm a purist in that way.
I still got to have my milk, no matter what. The milk just brings something extra to it.
Trevor, I agree with you. It's a little weird.
I was hoping you'd back me up a little more, Trevor. I'm looking for some kind of, you know, it's fine.
And Trevor,
nothing's wrong with weird sometimes.
No, nothing's wrong with weird. And speaking of a guy who is a little quirky, Trevor, I feel like any interview ever with a teammate of Brook Lopez, you have to ask them if they have any funny or weird Brook Lopez stories. Do you got anything for us that comes to top of mind?
Brook Lopez. Not that I can think of right off the bat.
Gotcha.
I just know that he's a big Disney fan.
Mm-hmm.
Like a huge Disney fan. I think he bought, you know, a piece of land on a Disney property down in Orlando. I think him and Robin, and I think they built a 22,000 square foot house, and I think each house is Disney themed, which is pretty cool for a kid, you know.
You can take your kids there to see it, and they can hang out with Brook and Robin.
Yeah, maybe they'll let me hang out with the kids.
They'll have some dry cereal ready for them.
Trevor, before you go, who do you think is going to win the Eastern Conference? Obviously, Philly made the huge trade yesterday, getting Tobias Harris and really solidifying what looks to be a dynamite starting five for them, but have teams in the mix like Toronto, Milwaukee, can't forget about Boston. Which of those four do you see as the favorite to face the Western Conference opponent? Probably the Warriors.
If I had to pick, I would have to say Toronto. I think Philly made a huge move in getting Tobias Harris, and I love it. And he's going to, you know, really help them out. But I think it's going to be Toronto and Philly in the Eastern Conference Finals. But I think the home court advantage is going to, you know, it's going to get Philly. So I take Toronto. I mean, you can't overlook, you know, Boston and Milwaukee either. So, I mean, it's going to be, you know, nice when it comes to the playoffs. But I have to take, you know, Toronto.
For sure. And I think that also it'll completely depend on what happens the next couple hours. Like if Boston or Milwaukee or Toronto or one of those teams makes a trade, we could see something completely different. I mean, the NBA is like constantly changing.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to the next couple of hours. This is the best time of the year in the NBA for me. Except, you know, when I'm on the trading block.
Yeah. So you get to kind of to look at it with without that anxiety now, and we can all refresh Woj and Shams' Twitter together. Trevor, appreciate you joining us. Before you leave, anything that you want to plug for the fans?
Be on the lookout for me. You know, right now I'm rehabbing a big toe injury. So look for me within the next month or two.
Looking forward to it. We are it's very ominous news you dropped. Good news, though. And we will be on the lookout. Follow him at 35_fits on Twitter. Trevor Booker, thank you for joining us.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Trevor.